We have some new tour dates to announce. Yes, tour dates. Jacksonville, Florida on May the 3rd. Jacksonville, Florida, May the 3rd at Bespoke House. It is a night of a show and the stories behind the songs with yours truly. Get your tickets in the description below. Again, on May the 10th, that is May the 10th, we will be in Logansport, Louisiana. May the 11th, we'll be at the Horseshoe or Dare pool party. May the 11th in Bossier City, Louisiana. Get your tickets. All of that is linked below. Shows are being announced regularly. Be sure to become a trier. Yes, you are my label, independent artist here, musician, mortician. Yes, my song is inspired by my works and you becoming a trier. We have different versions of levels of membership. First looks, first listens, first watches, all the exclusive. Like, this podcast will be exclusively released for our triers only, as well as additional giveaways. Like, Aaron just won an exclusive limited vinyl and Jeremy won hats. And everyone, dependent upon your level of membership, you get all kinds of free shit. So click it. The link is in the description. Brand new merch just released. Merch store will be linked there. You are my label. Record labels have all this money that they throw at their artists, and their artists get the labels big and fat while they pump the road and try their best. You being my label, buying the merch, streaming the music, which is all linked in the description, helps me. Become a trier from free to paid. Get some tickets to the show. Jacksonville, Florida. Logansport, Louisiana. Bossier City, Louisiana. All right, triers. It's you, it's me. It's season 3 of YDT, episode 194 of a show which pulls back the curtain and takes down the walls brick by brick and exposes the hearts, the true hearts of those caring for those you love most. And we're talking about the dark side. The dark side. May the fourth be with you. Not that dark side. We're talking about the dark side of funeral service. Funeral service has a dark side. Yes, it does. We're going to dive deep into that. Special thanks to everyone who has supported this podcast, who supported everything in which I do. The music, yes, the music is streaming everywhere. Click in the description so you can get and listen to all of my music, which at this moment in time, DistroKid, it's a distribution. It's a independent artist's distributor to all the DSPs, digital services providers like Spotify, Apple Music, all of those where you can listen to my music. Independent artists love DistroKid or TuneCore or United Masters. They're great, but they also are pains in the ass. And the reason they are is because in their fine print, in the event they think something is suspicious or they don't have an explanation, then they will strike your account. They can even take your music down altogether from the streaming platforms. And they've striked our account a couple of times because they're like, you're independent. Why do you have so many streams? Well, we've had this massive radio push. We've had this massive social media support. We've had you supporting, and they can't explain it. So they're like, we're going to strike your account. So we're pushing back at DistroKid. And I encourage you, maybe send them a tweet at DistroKid, and say, hey, we love Nathan, but we are striking back. Sony's The Orchard, they distribute last time. I mean, the streams are bananas, but they're legit. If a stream is found to be fraudulent, because apparently they're like, ever since I've talked about it, my phone listens, and so now I get all these ads for these boosters or whatever. You can buy fake bots or fake streams, which make it look good for just like 2 seconds, and then, of course, Spotify's so smart that it flags and takes your account down. Like, it'll take it down. And because of these streams popping off because of the radio and because of the editorial playlists and all that, you know, these independent favoring distro kids or whatever, they don't know how to explain it. So they're like, oh, flagged. Well, we can push back and show proof that, hey, we've had this massive media push, marketing campaign, etc., which labels alike, they do radio campaigns where they will they hire radio promoters, Big Machine or Big Loud or Loud Mouth, whatever. Morgan Wallen's label has an in-house radio department. Stacy works for them, and she is working at radio with the stations to say, hey, we appreciate you. Thanks for playing the music. Thanks for playing the music. Morgan's got a new song coming out. And then they're marinating these relationships. It costs money, a lot of money, to send a single to radio. It is advantageous because, of course, people are listening to the radio. People are listening online. It just all helps the big picture. And I am excited that everything's really been firing off the way that it has. And hearing these messages from you all saying, hey, I heard your song, I'm in Illinois, or I heard your song, I'm in Kansas City, or I heard your song, it's really cool. That is cool. The showcase went amazing in New York City on 418. A lot of really cool industry people came, connected with a lot of people. It was really awesome to have the industry there. It was a small show being a showcase. It's industry people who've listened to music all day long. And the last thing they want to do is listen to even more music, but they listen to music, and I appreciate them coming out to do that. And a lot of really great things are in the works because of, thanks to the team, thanks to the crew, thanks to my publicist and everyone at Sony Zoo Orchard, whatever, okay, and Gatorade and Pinnacle and everybody who's been really supportive. Thank you for that. And thanks to you for continuing to push this and telling us, hey, come play. We're touring this summer. So showcase out the way. Tickets to future shows in the description. Become a trier. And we're talking right this moment about the dark side. The dark side of the funeral service. You get lost. There's so many legs to this. I was listening to Theo Von's podcast. And when you grow up in trauma, when you become an adult and the way in which you act or don't, or the way in which you react or don't, knowing the root of is awesome. It's great to say, there it is. There's the title. It's kind of like having a disease, and it's so, it's gone undiagnosed for so long. And finally, you have someone say, oh, you have this. That's great and all. It's important that the person who has that disease, that illness, doesn't sit in the illness. I'm sick. They get better. They do what they got to do. So you can get in this, Theo Von calls it the Ferris wheel. You can get on this and just continue to spin. And it's self-pity, self-deprecation, and a woe is me. And I think we all have been on that ride. I have. It's easy to stay on it. And the point for bringing all that up is there's also this masking and then this putting us under the rug, all of that growing up in trauma and whatnot. And all that was done within the funeral profession. So I'm speaking personally to my dark side of the funeral profession. And we can talk about the obvious ones, the time, the lack of, the consumption of, how it consumes you, this profession. Let's start at the beginning. When you go into the funeral service, you become an apprentice. This is generic. Yes, there are so many different ways to become licensed in the state. I'm speaking in the state of Kentucky. So if you are not in this state, or, oh, that doesn't apply to us. Okay, I'm speaking generically. Let me get that out of the way. But you sign up as an apprentice and you have to work 40 hours a week. You first got to find a place, but let's say you've got the place. You are so excited to be at your funeral home that you're at, and you work, and you are the apprentice. And being the apprentice, you have the bottom of the totem pole. I've got to earn my stripes thing happening. Totally fine. I get it. A lot of times it's taken advantage of. This profession is filled with a bunch of good old boys. I feel that the guard's changed. For the most part, by now, when I started, again, speaking personally in regards to the dark side of, had a lot of old timers in, still set in their ways, just burnt out to all hell. They didn't really have, they didn't really have lives, because the lives that they had were before social media, before all of that. I mean, it's pretty small to begin with. You know, I think social media has allowed for us to broaden our circles of influence and broaden our connections. That's fact. But when I started up, I think there was a lot of bullying. The dark side of that is, but you have no say. You have no, you kind of just feel like it's par for the course. And again, I guess at the beginning, talking about the woe is me, the self-pity, this isn't a self-pity thing. This is just a realization. I mean, who would have thought? But it was in the beginning of my start in the profession that I realized that adults are just magnified versions of prepubescent teens. Just a bunch of babies, big, whiny babies that can drive cars. I've never seen such ridiculousness that is. And the dark side of starting is you have this desire, or I did, to get involved in every facet of the profession. I wanted to be the best at transferring. I wanted to be the best at arranging. I wanted to be the best at embalming. I wanted to be the best at working visitation and standing door and being hospitable. And you have zero life. I did. And it becomes the life, the profession, the showing up, the staying up all night, going on calls. We were still answering the phone from the landline before we forwarded the phones to the answering service, then have our cell phones be at our pop. Yeah. And you worked, and there were only two crews. So Monday, there was not three crews or having a visitation staff. And you are burnt out before you even realize you're burnt out, but you're still having fun. It's this weird thing that you experience. You have fun because you're learning all this newness. You're still green and fresh and like, wow, this is so intriguing. And you're experiencing the first trauma scenes, the first fights in the chapel, the first standing up for yourself and realizing that what you're doing in the profession is good. And there comes a time where you get stuck in going through these motions of the profession that you end up choosing when you don't even have to. You're not on call. You're not supposed to work that weekend. But then there's this thought of, I'm needed. And then there's this self-inflation where you're building yourself up to think that the funeral can't happen without you. And it's not just me that this happened to, honestly. I mean, many of professionals that I've served alongside, it's not good or bad. I mean, I think it's bad, but not because, oh, that's bad, but bad because it's self-annihilating where you can't unplug, where you can't free your brain or free yourself to make the decision, you know what, I am off. Oh, they need me because this is my friend from high school's sister's brother's aunt's second cousin, and they said they knew me, so I have to be there. You justify being there all the time. And it's maddening. And you show up, and then you start to resent, just random resentment. You resent your family, maybe. You stop even going around them because you're experiencing compassion fatigue, but you don't realize that that's what you're experiencing. You're like, I don't know what this is. You just think you're tired and you don't want to be around people because you've been around people all day long. No, you carry everybody's shit. You learn to kind of compartmentalize in not a good way because you don't really get it out. There's this confidentiality aspect where within the four walls, sure, you can talk about, oh, that was terrible. Oh my gosh, did you see that? Oh my God, did you hear what they said? But outside of with your close employee teammates, you don't talk about it. And even then, that's not in a therapeutic manner. That's more of a maybe venting or frustrated manner. So you still have remnants of, and you carry it, and you totally discard your feelings and pay attention to your pulse, and life keeps happening. It keeps happening. Your relationships that you are in, the relationship that you're in. Now that I think about it, I was in mortuary school. I wasn't married yet. And for school, I had to call a funeral home owner. So I chose a funeral home owner in Washington State. Just called a random funeral home. And I talked to this man for almost an hour. He's a really kind man. I'll never forget the conversation. And he was going through a divorce. His wife and he were partners for over 20 years. They worked together, worked alongside each other, grew a family, grew a successful business. And he said, I looked up one day and I hadn't fed my relationship, and she hadn't either. We were so focused on the business and growing that and the families that we were serving that we lost sight of our family that we were supposed to serve. And I encourage you, young man, to not allow that to happen. And the dark side of is that it did and it does. You think, if I grow this, if I become this, if I make this, if I increase this, if I do this, then maybe, just maybe, things will be okay. We will be okay. It'll be enough. No, it's not. You have kids and the kids are brought into it. You get to work earlier. You stay at work longer. You lose sight of the priority. It's not intentional. It's not. When you're out of it now, you see it. So speaking to, again, my personal situation outside of that circle, that bubble that is the funeral profession, it's such a small group of people. And they're bullies. They're great people. That's going to be taken the wrong way. And I'm not going to try to justify that statement. Just incredible at taking care of people that are total strangers. Community members, which they're associates, they're acquaintances, but within the four walls, of the profession, the competition, the ridicule, the unwillingness to help, for the most part, is systemic. It's awful. There's so much judgment and it's sad, really. It's sad, really. And then there's the competition is great. I love competition. But then the competitiveness and the grossness that is that. It's like, oh, I can't be your friend because your funeral home is 3 miles away from mine, which is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. It's everywhere, by the way, in any state. Doesn't matter whether you're in Kentucky or Ohio. I mean, I've talked to numerous people. And then, you know, the mentorship that I had. And you hold people in such high regard and they are people and they remind you that they're people. And there's this element of grace giving, but not grace receiving. The dark side of the funeral profession is that you just give and give and you lose yourself. And then you find yourself on the Ferris wheel. And it might be a little bit of self-pity. It might be, I guess this is life. There's like complacency. There's this, I'm tapping out. It's this is what I'm accepting. But all while there's this element of gratitude and appreciation, because I'm telling you, the fact that I've served alongside some of the most incredible people is not a farce statement to have made. It's real. I mean, I really have. And there are people that I love and I miss and I can't wait to see again one day when the time is right and just give them a hug and share, because I wasn't afforded that opportunity in some instances. And the first 2 years in the profession, I grieved because I thought that I was a failure in music. But I didn't realize then, but shortly thereafter, in the middle of the career, I did realize that I can be both, which... you can knit sweaters because you love to knit and answer phones as an exceptional receptionist. And you work as a receptionist to pay the bills. You knit because it's your heart's desire and it's your passion in life. So the thing of being the musician and the mortician, you look up, you have four kids and a booming business, and your plates are spinning and your face is gaunt and you are shot. Your mental health is shot. You've given all of yourself and you've spread yourself so thin. You've given every bit of yourself to everybody and you filled every bucket. You have nothing left to fill, not only your bucket, but the buckets of those you probably should fill. And you're not aware or able. And then you, in your kindness, you let others in, and you see goodness and kindness and advantage. People take advantage, and along the way, you may or may not make good or bad decisions, and you find yourself to be reactive in some instances, and the profession is filled with incredible feelers, people who feel and need to be needed, but not great business people. And you try to be a great business person. You know, you learn all that you can. And there's this exhaustion of the old school is you have to know how to do everything in the profession. Well, you tell me one person at any profession that, well, I should say this because God forbid. What I'm trying to get at is there are roles and positions in different corporations, companies, because not everybody excels at everything, but the profession tends to think, oh, you've got to be able to embalm the hell out of this person and then wait on this family exceptionally well. A lot of people in the care center are in the care center because they don't want to be around people because, you know, they might be quirky and they don't want to interact with other people that are on this personal level. They don't necessarily have the emotional capacity and bandwidth to be like, oh, you know, because it's a lot. It drains you. Someone like myself, I love being in front of people. I get refueled and my battery recharged by being in front of people, with people. I don't like to be alone in the care center all the time. I can do it, but my lane is with the people. My lane is the creative ideas and not the Excel spreadsheets. But God forbid you have to do it all. You have to do every bit of it. How dare you? I hex you for not knowing how to do absolutely everything exceptionally well. It's daunting. And you try. You do all that you can, and you root for, and you build people up, and you lose yourself. At the cost of yourself, do you serve exceptionally well? Others before self. Others before family, before self. I mean, like, everything in the community you serve gets first and priority treatment over your mental health or your physical well-being, your physical health, your family. And you choose strangers over them and you. And it's a beautiful thing to a degree, to an extent. And then it becomes this habitual thing that is just a setup for disaster. And the dark side of the funeral profession is you look up one day, you're in your 30s, you've grown something with people that you, and what's it for? You know, like, what's it all for? You've missed out. You've told everybody. You've missed so many vacations and baptisms, Christmas parties. You tell people no. You're no, I'm not going. I can't go. I'm on call. Freaking on call. You've made yourself on call. It's like you insert yourself to be perpetually available at the mercy of and the cost of yourself. It's a sad and beautiful reality. The dark side of the profession is the fatigue that it causes, creates. Some people, maybe it doesn't, but I will put my last dollar on the statement that the profession is very trying on relationship, any relationship, friendly, familial, romantic, even the most seasoned and well-equipped people. Because you only have so many buckets. And first and foremost, instead of, I don't want to say God, but for me, you know, God, family, self, you know, those buckets, it immediately is family outside of your circle and community family member, family, funeral home. It's all these other buckets that you fill. And you don't realize it. You're blind by it. You're blinded to it. You don't see it. You're so busy in the profession. It steals you. But the profession needs you, and it needs incredible people. And I don't know what the balance is, because maybe the epiphany for me is that it was only to be a season, to be in it as immersed as I had been. Maybe I'm not meant to be in it in that way because of the way in which I take that on and just the intensity that I do it, 100 miles an hour. One funeral home? Nah, let's do another one. It's maddening, but the dark side is that it flatlined me. I mean, like a year ago on social media, if you look at pictures of me, I'll never forget. It was probably 2 years ago, really, when this started to happen. And someone who we have had cater numerous events, she is an amazing human being. Maria is her name. And she lovingly, by the way, I will say that, because somebody would be like, that's not a nice thing to say. She pulled someone to the side and said, "Is Nathan okay? He doesn't look good." And if you look at me a couple of years ago, I was on this awful, self-destructive. I don't know how else to word it. It wasn't necessarily intentionally self-destructive. And then jokingly, I'll say, Audra, if you're listening, Audra was like, "Boss, you look like shit." I'll never forget that. It was in May of 2022, I believe. And I did. And I am now the best I've ever been in my entire life. The profession, it masked. I put all of my feelings and all of my challenges that I probably should have been facing, getting through, and I hid them away. And growing up in trauma, again, circling back, I'm not victimizing, but this is what it's cause and effect. It's like, I'll just move this over here. I'll just hurry it up. Let's get this over with. I'll be the fall guy. I'll be the nice guy, or I'm going to do this, or okay, that's fine. I'll make a decision or not make a decision, which is very unhealthy, just to not have to face something that it might make me think or feel. But when you flatline and you're going through all this shit, and then because of your works, because of everything that you love and believe in so much, all that darkness that you're talking about, just the dark side of the after effects, there's the beauty in us meeting, with social media taking off, popping off, going nuts, and then getting to this point, the beast that, and then you have like, oh, the funeral profession needs you to be obsessive about it again, or oh, you appear like you're always playing on the computer and social media and stuff, when all reality, it took like 5 minutes to make the videos, and it didn't matter. It was like I was being pulled into the the pit that I was known to put myself in. It was almost like, why are you constantly available for everybody else and not here, whatever that meant. And then the social media started to take off, and then it's like, why are you available to everybody else and you're not here? It was just such a very odd thing that was happening, and I was going nuts. I was going nuts. I was very much in a struggle, and the profession is beautiful and hard to not just stay in. I have something on my tongue. Picture it like a swimming pool. You're in the pool. You're not just dipping your feet and kicking your legs to stay cool and going and putting sunscreen on and laying out. You're underwater constantly. And there's something beautiful about it. It really is. It's this very odd thing, because of the compassion and the willingness, the desire, the drive, the heart behind everybody who just willingly submerges themselves is beautiful. And it's at the cost of so much. And the dark side of is that a version of me died. I mean, really, it did. It would have killed me. I was on a self-destructive path because of just being everything for everyone, working 16, 18 hours, totally lost myself. And I was trying to get pieces of the, just keeping everything together. And it would have killed me. But I didn't realize any of this. So I'm kind of picking and pulling and showing you this stuff is happening, and now I'm zoomed out and I see it now, but I didn't then. Funeral professionals don't retire, they die. Like, you can't not be submerged in it. And whenever social media, and it's like, you will have to choose, we're going to choose for you to a degree. There's a couple of very odd things happening in that moment, and I was like, I'm done. I'm done. It's killing me. I'm done. And I chose this life of musician and creative and influencer, and I love it. And I died. Some of me died. And the versions of me that I thought I needed to be for everybody, dance monkey, was real to a degree. For the families needed you to, the profession needed you to, those people you served alongside needed you to. At what cost? At what? You grew this massive thing. You're part of this beautiful service, and every funeral director. And it's like, you're continuing the legacy. You're continuing the service that is absolutely an admirable one. And then you look up and you're 80, and along the way, there was not much self-reflection, I guess. And so I realized there was some death happening. I was dying. Part of me died. A version of me that I thought I needed to be died. Not an inauthentic version of. The version of that was in the profession was very, very authentic. It really longed to take care of and help people. And if I might say, I was really, really good at it and still am. And I have that. And I've learned to be gentle and slow to react. Learned a lot of great things because of the profession. It's also because of the profession that I hurt so much. And what I did and didn't do hurt so much for others too. You hear a lot about these homes that we would buy, the families, the kids of, they're grown adults. And they're like, we didn't see dad much at all. We don't remember dad. And that was tough because then what? If I don't, you made those excuses. The dark side is that there's a tug of war happening that you don't even know is happening. Self doesn't necessarily even exist. And it was after I was plucked and reflected, and then the therapy of and realizing that the things I've been exposed to and the people that I've been exposed to and the hurt that I've experienced and the hurt that I've caused. And it's offered this beautiful perspective, because perspective is the way that we should view the world. And there is victory in this whole thing that I'm saying, that I'm talking about, the suffering. The profession is one of service and suffering. And not from the standpoint of being a victim while people are experiencing grief and sadness. Like, oh my gosh, woe is me. I'm doing such a suffered. I'm suffering so much for you. That's not what I'm saying. But there is this level of I'm going to just drag myself through the mud and muck because this family deserves it. But if you do that enough, and then the habit that ensues, self is gone. Relationships are gone. And if you're lucky enough to be plucked, like I have been, then you're able to work on it, to heal, and to rise to this new level, to experience, like, the sun shines differently now. The grass, it's real. The grass smells better. It's absurd. The feeling of living finally. Like, finally feeling alive. And then those moments of despair that I witness for other families, and I'm sitting there and I'm holding their hands through these moments. Oh, thank you, Nathan, so much. Thank you so much. You were so good. You were so good. You were so good. You were so good. I wouldn't take any of that back, because that is now something I can look at as a huge gift. But you have only so many buckets. And the bucket that was a personal life, intimate relationships, family, it was gone. I was white knuckling. That's what I was doing. I was white knuckling at the cost of myself. I knew it. I was still holding tight to this thought, this idea. This is what I had to do. This is who I had to be. This is what whether it's the stars or God, whatever it is for you, I meet you here, and I'm grateful for you. And be sure to subscribe, and be sure to click in the description, become a trier. And I say all that because, like, I white knuckled until I realized, like, there's a new season. And I picked the tulip because the tulip was representative of a new season and change and new life and resurrection. And that's what this is. That's what this is. I've lost so much because of giving of myself, or maybe not. And some of my loneliest nights because of. But I've gained everything. And I am grateful to have experienced it. People are worthy to be loved and cared for. People, that's you. And whether you have much or little, being able to sit with families during their most delicate of times, all families, all types, all walks of life. It's blessed me because it's given me the opportunity to realize that everyone is a human and we all want to feel a part of a community. And you're silly, buddy. Hey, baby. The dog just joined me. The dark side of the funeral profession is also the bright side of life for me. Don't stay on that Ferris wheel. Don't choose self-pity. I hope that you're plucked before it's too late and you're able to see. And even if it, quote-unquote, is too late, it's not. And I'm grateful for those who are listening, who I've been privileged to serve with, and those who have loved me, genuinely loved me, unconditionally, without condition, without, and could see. And those who know me well will know if they know. And I don't mean to speak cryptically, but I just want people to know that those who have allowed me into their homes and lives, those who have chosen us, it was not all for naught. And I'm a better human because of. And I'm grateful for all of it. In the weirdest way, I'm grateful for all of it. My side, my dark side might not be yours. You might not ever experience a dark. And for that, blessings. And should you? Therapy, self-reflection, a very small circle, kindness creates seeing goodness in all. And there is goodness in all, but there's also, you got work cut out for you because people are generally good, yes, but people also are people. And you got to be able to see and trust your gut. That's all for episode 194, The Dark Side of the Funeral Profession for me. Thanks for supporting the music and my creativeness. Click the links in the description, get some new merch, join the Triers Club. And 195 is just over the hill and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. Thanks for being you.